Well, what did I miss?
I'm just waiting for your reaction on this intro record. I know how much you love it. What do we got here, AD?
I have no idea.
Yes, you do.
No, I don't.
It's one of your favorites.
Well, it's not Bad Company.
No. Who is it, Liz?
It's Sammy Hagar.
Listen. This song's... You hate him so much.
What intro record?
Have you got yours muted? You know,
Discogs did not pick this, Ryan McKay.
Discogs totally spat this one out.
My brain can shut it off.
This is such a stupid
clown song.
I love Sammy Hagar. I don't care what you say, AD. This is from 1978, live all night long on Capitol Records.
Why do all of his songs sound the same?
I don't know. It just is.
I'll tell you why.
You care to add any comment?
What is he doing? What kind of song is this?
He's singing about a color.
Like...
Your face. You're so angry. Liz, do you like Sammy Hagar while AD fumes in the corner?
I like Montrose.
I like Montrose.
Yes.
Okay, well, this is a... It's got...
It's got nothing to do with...
Yeah, nothing.
One of the guys is from Montrose on this album.
It's not Montrose.
You're the bass player?
Yeah, I think it's the bass player.
Bill Church?
Yes.
Yeah.
How about that bridge? All right, we better get out of here before... Let's get out of here.
I want to be like Joy Behar and walk off the show.
Not so much Joy Behar.
Yeah, Joyless Behar.
Let's get going. All right, let's get cracking.
Hey, crack.
Release the Kraken.
Tonight, what do you say we have a rock and roll party?
Come on, boy!
Abbey Road Records show.
Heavy metal, rock and roll is always going to be with us. Day after day, year after year, it's never going to die.
Who likes rock and roll? Yeah!
Abbey Road Records show.
Put down the boxing gloves and try and just get it together.
You like that?
Yeah.
Well, hey, Llama.
Hey, fucking Llama.
The Shabby Road Record Show is on the air. Your hipster-free vinyl podcast. I'm your host, Ryan McKay. And now, he's just seaside sitting just a-smoking and a-drinking on ringside. On top of the world is A.D. Adams.
I am indeed at the top of the globe. Hello again, everybody. Welcome to the show that keeps on giving. Headaches, heartburn, diarrhea, and mild cases of chafing, that is. It's time for a brand new episode of the audio version of a colonoscopy, the Shabby Road Record Show. Please step on up in the scale, drop your pants, turn your head and cough, and we promise this won't hurt a bit. Ha! Bullshit, it'll hurt like hell. But don't be scared, because we got records. Let's do this.
We do have records tonight to share with you. This is episode 194.
94.
Closing in on 200.
Jeez.
And... it's not just you and me, AD. There's also someone here that
me
is...
Me and you and a dog named Boo?
Wow. No, I'm speaking of the notorious LDB.
Oh,
that is Liz Damian Brooks. What's up, Liz?
Thank you very much.
How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing so much better. I feel so much more alive and happy with life.
You've recently had some
medical
procedures.
Mm-hmm.
And you're loaded with cortisone.
Yes, I am.
Nice.
Yeah.
Do you smoke it or do you snort it?
Shots.
Shots. Oh, that's dirty tequila. That's not cortisone.
Yeah. Shots are my favorite things in the whole world. Yeah,
no wonder you're feeling good.
She did like cartwheels on the way in here today. She feels
right?
So good.
I know. You bopped on in. You
modern science.
Vivacious and percolating.
Yep.
Well, she's also brought with her the percolating Sal 5000, who's here with us.
I like things that are bad for me.
Oh.
Oh, hey now.
I think we have the Randy Sal with us, don't we?
We do have Randy Sal. We also have our friends over at nameonanything.com, AD.
Nameonanything.com. Ryan, don't you hate when you're pulling bongs with your best pals and that
what?
Same damn someone keeps stealing your lighters? You know the guy. You Deuce? Say to them, hey, man, right? You say to them, hey, man, that's my yellow lighter. And they look at you and go, no, man, that's my yellow lighter. And you say, no. No, but I always use a black marker on the bottom of mine. The yellow lighter has a black marker on the bottom that you have. It's my lighter. And they say, wow, that's so crazy. What a coincidence. I put black marker on the bottom of my lighters, too. What are the odds? And so it goes.
Wow.
Well, the great folks at nameonanything.com can put a stop to that shit immediately and permanently. At nameonanything.com, you can order fully personalized and customized lighters and a million other products with your name, company logo, or your favorite photo on it. And you'll never have to deal with that shit again. Order as many as you want in a variety of colors, styles, and sizes. So next time that certain someone tries to steal your lighter and claims that it's their lighter with your name on it, you can legitimately and justifiably punch them square in the dick. God, wow. I hate that shit. So do the guys at nameonanything.com. Thanks, nameonanything.com. I want to party with you fuckers, and I'll bring the lighter. Nameonanything.com.
Hey, give me back my lighter.
Just for you, dear listener, who has just been subjected, just heard all of that rant. Just for you, I'm prepared to offer you 10% off of... your nameonanything.com order because I'm a nice guy.
You are a nice guy.
And so are they over there at that place. All right. We do have some records here to dole out. AD, and we each have one because I'm still in the process of moving. My records are in boxes.
Yes.
So bear with us. But, I mean, we had a ball last week, did we not?
What a show. What a weird show. We set the music world on its ear. I think I had an 18-minute folk song, and you had a 3-minute prog song.
Yep.
Whoa.
Yes.
That's just bizarre.
World is upside down.
Yeah. Name another show that can offer you that.
Opposite world there. That was like, parallel universe.
No, there's a reason why other shows don't offer that.
Yeah, they're scared.
So we got one each, and we're about ready to dole them out here. Liz has the two playing cards, and she's going to put one in each hand. She's got a left hand and a right hand. And I think I'll pick.
Most of us do.
Not all of us.
We're born that
way. Leopard.
Def Leppard. God damn it. Wow. That really upset Liz.
I'm sorry. Drummer from Def Leppard.
Yes, exactly. I will choose left for Sinister Hand.
Oddly enough, that's the one he doesn't have.
Black. Jesus Christ.
Oh, sorry. Sorry
you
again.
You monster.
Sorry again.
So I'm going first.
Yeah, please.
I want to give a shout out to our buddy G-Man.
Yeah? Oh, yeah.
He got us some beer.
Yay.
The scallywag.
That scallywag got us some Miller High Life. He did.
Oh,
I love you, Gary.
Thank you
for
G-Man.
My album, Gary. I love you.
Which album did Gary give you?
He got me David Johansen.
Oh, yeah. Live It Up record.
Yep. Oh, that's a fun record.
Saw that. Yeah, live, right?
Yeah.
That's a great record.
Yep.
He went to the website, shabbyroadrecordshow.com, and where you'll find a frosty, tall mug of beer that says, fill the fridge.
Well, and so he did.
So he did.
Sometimes you miss. This should be a video
minutes.
Podcast sometimes.
It should. Our faces are priceless.
And so he did that, and it's a PayPal link. So that's what he did. He hooked us up, and we are drinking our champagne of beers.
Yep. Yeah.
Fridge is empty, Cindy. Gary.
Right,
we need some
right
more.
Here. Cheers.
If you guys want to do that, please stop by and do the same thing. So, all right. I'm really excited about this record. I've listened to this record all day today, and I'm going, you know what? It's sort of like what Johnny Zapp talked about last month.
Yeah.
He had that thing where he was like, these guys are super famous, but they had this whole other career before the huge hits.
Okay. And, right, yeah, yeah.
And no band. We never did coin a phrase for that because we always have our little phrases.
Oh, sure.
We never really officially settled on it.
Are you saying you have one?
No. I don't know. I mean, he brought Robert Palmer and he said...
Right.
He said that, he had this great run of records before, Addicted to Love and what have you. Maybe you tell me, is this band good enough to be the titular band for this disease. Thank Sorry. You. I just wanted to use that word. All right. Compliments of Jay by Proxy, one of our favorite buddies over there in California. He sent me a while back, and I've been meaning to play this. I'm very excited. This record is fucking great. It's Fleetwood Mac.
Peter Green, then?
Do you have Fleetwood Mac when they first got Stevie Nicks?
No. No, I'm going a little bit earlier.
So Peter Green, Fleetwood Mac.
I'm going a little bit later. I'm going to 1973, a lost period for Fleetwood Mac. I brought Mystery to Me.
You see that record everywhere.
Mystery to Me, yeah.
It's a good record?
I dig it. This is okay. Bob Welch.
Okay, right.
This is the Bob Welch-led Fleetwood Mac. So I don't know if that really falls into that same category that Johnny was talking about, but it's sort of like, it certainly is an unsung record comparatively, because you hear of 80's already doing the gatefold. Look at him. He is.
I'm looking for Stevie Nicks. Is that her?
Stevie Nicks is not in the band.
He's not in the band. At the time.
He's pointing to a
man.
I think
I had a mustache.
He's pointing
it's actually Bob Welch.
That's horrifying. So this album is produced by Martin Birch. Now, Martin Birch is one of our favorite producers. I mean, you know him from heavy metal,
that's
right?
That's a good start right there.
Iron Maiden, sure. And Black Sabbath. And
this record, literally, this record's in 20 record stores within 10 miles a year right now.
Exactly, for $3.99.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's actually quite good. I like this period.
Okay.
This is sort of that period where they make an album called Bare Trees. You've seen that.
Sure.
Penguin, this album, and that one where it's Mick Fleetwood on the cover who's like skeletal-looking shirtless.
Jeez, yeah.
You see that one everywhere.
He should have been in Silverhead.
Yeah. Right? So, dilapidated. So it's produced by Martin Birch. It's recorded with the Rolling Stones mobile. Thank you. Yeah. And ironically, the magazine of Rolling Stone gave the album a bad review. So let's talk about the lineup. Okay, so where are we at with Fleetwood Mac here? We are, obviously, you got your Fleetwood and your Mac, which would be Mick Fleetwood and John McVie.
Right.
His wife, Christy McVie, who at this point had been in the band for 3 or 4 records. And two guitarists, Bob Weston and Bob Welch. Okay. Now, this is obviously, Liz, before Stevie Nicks and Lindsey Buckingham, and it's post Peter Green. So we have it's not the early Fleetwood Mac from the 60s, and it's not the superstar Fleetwood Mac with Stevie and Lindsey.
Let's call it Fleetwood Mac Mark II.
Fair.
Ish.
Fair.
Yeah.
Fair. So Peter Green. Fabulous guitarist. If you think about early Fleetwood Mac, your mind tends to go to Peter Green because he was such an influential guitarist from the British blues scene of the late 1960s. Peter Green left Fleetwood Mac in 1970. At the time of his departure, the Fleetwood Mac had 3 guitar players. Yeah, so it was a 5-piece band, but it was 3. It was like Skynyrd, you know. It was like all 3 guitar players. You had your Peter Green, you had Danny Kirwan, and Jeremy Spencer. Now, Jeremy, there's so many great stories here that were everybody belt in. I'm putting my beer down and pointing at both of you. There are so many stories we're going to unfold here.
We have like
Fleetwood Mac has never been without drama.
I mean, right, yeah.
You think of the Lindsey and Stevie period of being dramatic. Oh, no. Fleetwood Mac has always had drama since the day it started. So Jeremy Spencer is not on this record. He left the band in early 1971. This record comes out in 1973. And he had a bizarre departure from the group, some might say. They're touring the United States, is Fleetwood Mac. And he disappeared in Los Angeles. On the afternoon of a gig. The afternoon of a gig. We sound checked. We're good to go.
Sounds like Ace.
Where's Jeremy?
Where's Jeremy?
Well.
Wasn't he doing a lot of acid at the time, if I'm not mistaken?
Oh, no, A.D.
Oh, no.
He was very pure. So pure of heart that he has joined a religious cult.
Father's Knob.
Father Yacht.
Not I so wish in my heart of hearts that it was Father Yod's cult.
You're doing research. Go, please be Father Yod. Please be Father.
It's not Father Yod's cult.
Charles Manson.
It's the Children of God.
Aren't cult. We all? Really? Thank you.
Yes. Children of God, and you know I'm going to click on the link that says Children of God cult. Well, let's find out what they're all about.
Okay.
All right.
Dissolved in 1977 after uncovering their practice of flirty fishing.
Wait, what?
What?
What do you call flirty?
Flirty?
Like you fishing. Make like you take your shirt off and jump and give
entice
fish,
the fish.
Come hither
they're
looks.
Fishies.
Apparently,
come hither looks.
In the book of Matthew.
Oh no.
Jesus had said one time I don't want to quote it because I'll get it wrong, but they claim that it was part of like the book of Matthew, or Jesus said something, I will make you fishers. You will not fish for fish. You will be fishers of men. That's the sort of, the gist of it.
Nice gills, baby.
So flirty fishing.
Prostitution.
Was defined as using sex appeal for proselytizing. If masturbation, oral or penetrative sex ensued, this was termed as, quote, loving sexuality and counted as a deep witnessing, meaning that the bait earned more brownie points within the group than mere flirting. The cult leader, whose name, by the way, is not Father Yod, but David Berg, noted that flirty fishing did not necessarily entail intercourse, but that this was by far the most efficient method of proselytizing.
Prostitution.
So is that where... Oh, God! Oh, God!
So basically,
oh God.
The men... So,
Jesus!
So his thing was that... So this particular David Yod, David Berg, was saying that he would send young girls out to have sex with men to get them into the church. Like, if you want more sex with me, you need to join the Children of God.
Okay, right.
That's
right. There's more where that came from.
Flirty fishing.
I mean, there's more where that came from.
Yeah, and so the girls would.
So he was the pimp, and they were the prostitutes.
So that's what happened to the first guitarist.
That day. So just that day.
That day of the gig.
He had never heard of it before, and suddenly he was... fished.
So was he
was flirty fished is what happened.
He was lured into this group by the prostitutes.
Yes.
Oh,
and the girls were the fishermen and the boys were the fish.
The bait.
Yes, the flirty fish. So Jeremy Spencer is all flirty fit or is being well fish. He's a fish. He was caught.
He's gutted.
He was gutted. Yes. So enter American guy in California. He happened to be in LA. They're like, "Oh God, we need a dude." And Bob Welch was there, and that's how he got into the band, because Jeremy Spencer flipped out and joined the Children of God cult. And so he was brought in to replace him, after the fishing expedition was over.
So did they do the gig without him? Or?
Oh, it canceled. They canceled it.
Oh,
I bet you in 1977, he's like going, oh, I'm a fucking asshole.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So the other guy, Danny Kerwin, became increasingly more... Well, let's be honest. He became increasingly more alcoholic as things wore on. This is not the best period of time for Fleetwood Mac. You know, Peter Green is gone. And now we've got one guy leaving, for a cult and a new guy from L.A. And now Danny Kerwin, the last of the original, guitarists, was drinking a lot. And by 1972... A year after the other dude left for fishing, the fishing expedition, backstage before a concert on another U.S. tour to promote the Bare Trees album, he argued with Welch over the tuning of their guitars, accusing Bob Welch of being out of tune. And then his guitar, Danny Kerwin's guitar, was not staying in tune.
You're out of tune. No, you're out of tune. No, you're out of tune.
And
no, you're out of tune.
So, suddenly, Danny flew into a violent rage, banging his head and fists against the wall, grabs that sunburst Gibson Les Paul, and threw it into a mirror and shattered the mirror and the guitar in the process and cutting himself. He's bleeding all over the place. and trashing the entire dressing room, turning over all the tables. And by the time he had completely dismantled the tables, he's sitting there and now he's bloody. And he's like, I shan't go on.
Well, I don't think so.
What is the matter with them? And you know what it is? That goddamn John McVie. He does
70
something.
Years
I feel like he does
book.
Something. He does some shit. He like, nobody knows.
You're blaming
like,
John McVie.
Yeah, I'm just going to blame John McVie. Probably the nicest of all. The guy with the least drama. Oh, that John McVie.
So it doesn't end there that
oh,
night.
Good.
I mean, literally the crowd is cheering them on. Fleetwood Mac. Fleetwood Mac. He's like, I shan't go on.
Nope.
And so there's no canceling the gig now.
Well, no.
So it's Bob Welch as a four, and it's a four piece Fleetwood Mac at this point. And so they come out and they limp through a gig and with very mixed results. And so what does Danny Kieran do? Well, he heckles them drunkenly from the mixing.
Oh, no. What a dick.
And then he goes backstage after the gig and continues to heckle him.
You guys were horrible.
You guys
you need another guitar player.
Suck. That's why
you
I
suck without me.
If you guys didn't have a guitar player, you'd been good.
So here we are back in America again, and this guitar player has gone off the deep end.
God almighty.
So let's get another dude. So let's get a British guy this time. So they go back to England and they refocus and they get Bob Weston. Now, Bob Welch and Bob Weston are both on this record that we're about to hear. Bob Weston, they get from Long John Baldry's band.
Okay, oh, right. You know, long
player.
History, pro players, a yeah. good stock
yep,
of music.
Exactly. This guy's good. They did gigs together. They have a great relationship, especially like Bob and Mick Fleetwood are best of friends. And it's like, this is a great, you know, a great fit after Drunky McBoozington flipped out in the LA hotel room or whatever, or the backstage, then now we're ready to go. And so in 1973,
Fishy Bob.
Yeah. Right? Fishy
or
Jeremy.
Jeremy. Or
yeah. And so in 1973, they do the album Penguin. And so now everything's going great until the tour.
Who do you sleep with?
What is wrong with them?
He started banging
Mick
Fleetwood's wife.
I knew it.
You thought it was bad in the late 70s? Oh, my God. So during the band's 1973 American tour, they appeared on the Midnight Special.
I remember that. I saw that.
He's literally banging his wife at the time.
Well, not during the show.
not during the show. But it became clear that Bob was having an affair with Mick Fleetwood's wife, Jenny. And they were friends, and it's like, you're in the band, and now, but it seemed like something had to give. We can't keep this guy on board if he's going to continue to rail my wife backstage at the Midnight Special.
Lord.
So they're in Lincoln, Nebraska, you know, and I love Nebraska. I've played Lincoln, Nebraska, but it's a fairly desolate area, and he's just
pretty
like,
much.
And there's nothing to do there but drink in the hotel room. So obviously things came to a head, and it's over. So Mick Fleetwood told both John and Christine McVie that, and Bob Welch that, like, I'm not going on. I can't do this with this guy who's literally sleeping with my wife. So they called their manager from the road, whose name, ironically, is John Courage.
Be brave, lads. Be brave.
And so...
So they summoned up the courage.
So he fires... they make him fire Bob Weston.
Good. That's his job.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we had that conversation.
Did they send Mick's wife home?
Yes, she had already gone.
I'm betting Mick sent Mick's wife home.
I'm pretty sure that would have stopped the problem right there.
Yeah, so they send him back, and... they go, the tour's off, you know, screw the tour, we're going back to the UK. And with the tour cut short, the band went back to England and had to kind of atone for the, you know, all of the shit that's going on in the States. And John Courage is the road manager. So the road manager is the one that fires.
Because he's actually there with them.
So they told the head honcho,
right,
Clifford Davis, who was so angry that they canceled that tour, that he sent another group of musicians on the road as Fleetwood Mac, claiming that owned the name.
Oh. Whoa, without Mick himself. Like,
without Mick or John.
Band. Oh, my God.
Yeah, he's like, fuck all y'all. I own the name. You're going to finish that tour with some other slags from Lincoln, Nebraska, probably.
And they played Fleetwood Mac songs?
Yes.
Oh my God. There's no business like show business. Like, Jesus Christ, are you kidding?
Moving on.
Jeez.
Weston's out. Right?
Now, Stevie Nicks and Lindsey Buckingham aren't even...
They're angels.
Right? They're not even in the picture yet.
I'm not done yet.
Neither are they, I have a feeling.
So, by the way, a quote from Bob Weston, who was banging Mrs. Fleetwood. It was the most expensive affair I've ever had in my life. Cost me career, that did.
Yeah. Think about that.
Think?
Yeah, think
asshole,
about that.
Jesus Christ. Oh, poor Christy McVie. I mean, having to witness all this stuff on the road, right? Oh,
yeah.
No. Oh, no. She's not immune to this behavior.
She started banging Mick Fleetwood, right?
Yes, she did.
No. Stevie Nicks, I believe, was banging
Mick
Fleetwood.
I know that.
She was doing both.
You know who Christy McVie was banging?
The road manager.
Producer Martin Birch.
Oh!
I love this. I'm having so much fun with this.
What the fuck?
It is Father Jan.
God.
Yeah.
God, Fleetwood Mac, what is wrong with you?
What is going on with Fleetwood Mac?
God.
This is all, you always hear about the other stuff, but no one knows. In 1973.
This is before the drama.
So let's hear a song.
What is wrong with you people?
Let's hear a song. Which is great, by the way. By the way, Bob Welch, I love Bob Welch. I love his style. He's got a great voice. He's a great guitar player. And he's sort of unsung, you know. And so we're going to hear one of his tunes called Miles Away. It's on track two, I think it is. And again, the album is called Mystery to Me from October 73, which... In October 1973, if you've been paying attention, you guys, Christy McVie is banging the producer, Martin Birch, and the other guitarist, Bob Winton, is banging Mick Fleetwood's wife.
Again?
Wow, she looks a bit like Mick Ralphs in this picture.
Christy McVie?
Yeah.
She does kind of look like Mick Ralphs.
Now, they had sort of a semi-hit with Emerald Eyes on this one. That was kind of their semi...
Great song. I almost wanted to play that, and then there's...
sort of a semi-hit, if you
Hypnotized
will.
Is a great song.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
song.
That one.
I feel like people may know those, so I wanted to go a little deeper on this album.
Sure,
but I
sure.
love the style of both of those songs we just mentioned. I love that style. But we're going to play Miles Away, which has kind of got a little bit of that... style, but mixed in a little heavier, a little harder rocking.
Now, so, I heard that John McVie was actually banging Miles away.
Miles Davis.
Yeah, Miles Away.
Who was Mick?
He was a roadie. He was the drum tech, Miles Away.
Who was Mick banging?
I don't know.
He wasn't banging his wife.
I don't know. Only Mick can answer that.
Yeah, you got to bang something, Mick.
I don't know. Let's drop the needle on this.
It's messed up.
And try not to think of all the banging.
There's so much sin on this album. There's so much sinning going on.
Getting deeper all the time, and the faces that I see don't seem to shine. That's right. Now there's too much Warhol hanging off the wall, and the mystery that there used to be is gone. Let me go. Don Juan
rose up in a cloud of smoke. And all those Hare Krishnas turned out to be a joke. And it's restless, restless, restless all the time. Sliding up and down the surface of this line. And I know I can't say what's black and white. But if I could fly, I think I'd try tonight. You know why? Cause I'm
So, yeah, thanks to Jay by Proxy, who sent that record to me. It's Mystery to Me by Fleetwood Mac from 73. And I would never have picked that record up had he not sent that over. And I'm glad he did, because now I got the other records that sort of surround it on my list. Penguin, and I want to hear Bear Trees. And these are records I've never heard.
Yeah, that actually great point. And that you know, Christine McVie vocal harmony is very present, that very familiar, which is still in their in their sort of soundscope, if you will, is there, and that's sort of the formation, if you will, of the new, the modern Fleetwood Mac, what we all know as Fleetwood Mac,
right?
And
Liz had a name for it, right?
Yes,
she's finally coined the term.
Yes, Nebula.
I'm touching my nebula.
What's the definition of nebula?
A star is in a nebula before it actually becomes a star.
So part of their nebulous part of their career, the nebulous part.
Right.
I like it.
Very cool.
A Fleetwood Mac nebulous record.
By the way, none of us have been banging while Fleetwood Mac is playing, just so you know.
Yeah. Yes.
So just, you know.
Yeah.
I think we're going to stay. We can keep this group together.
I wonder how many of our listeners actually had affairs during that song.
Yes.
With other listeners.
Yeah. We kind of, you know, before we came back on, we kind of listened to a little bit of the Bob Welch stuff, like Emerald Eyes and Hypnotized.
Sure.
Which are just, it's such a vibe, this record, with those tracks, man. I like that stuff. So I'm definitely checking out the rest
of it. I'm going in too. Thanks, Jay, by Proxy. That was really cool, because that you see that record everywhere, and I just go, eh.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not, per se, a Fleetwood Mac fan. I don't dislike them. As a matter of fact, I love Mick Fleetwood as a drummer. I think
I do
he's
too.
A great drummer.
I do too.
In the Ringo sense. Everybody goes, Mick Fleetwood. I go, dude, his timing is exquisite.
Yes.
His mastery of not playing your typical kick snare hi-hat pattern, you know, eighth notes with the hi-hat and kick snare pattern, you know, underneath that. He's creative. He's clever. I think he brings a great dynamic. His use of the toms as melodic, if I dare say that.
He's percussion, a very melodic player.
I think is absolutely fantastic, and I don't think anyone plays like Mick Fleetwood, and that's from a drummer who loves fucking, you know,
Billy Cobham.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, he's a great drummer. I've always loved his pocket first, and then like you said, melodic. He's a very musical drummer.
He is, very much so.
Go Your Own Way at the end.
Oh, dude, that whole track is amazing.
It's a brilliant piece. I mean, Neil Peart, sit down.
Yeah, right?
Listen to Mick Fleetwood on Go Your Own Way by Fleetwood Mac.
Sure. You know? Absolutely.
All right, AD, where are you taking us?
Well, I tell you what, Ryan, if prog rock was a boxer, this cut would be Shoeless Joe Jackson and Butterbean Esh, all wrapped up in a sweet vinyl pita and served with a heaping side of Shut Up. This is one of the greatest prog cuts of all time. From London, 1971. Ryan, I have with me tonight, I'm shaking.
You brought more Tull. I will never stop slapping you.
Oh, let's talk about Tull just for a brief second.
Oh, we're sidebarring.
We're sidebarring.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
How do you like that that Stephen Wilson
For those interested.
Yeah. The Aqualung record.
You let me borrow the record.
Yes, you did.
Mm-hmm. That was a couple episodes ago.
Absolutely, yes.
That was the episode called...
I have no idea.
It was called
something about an alligator or something.
Quite the honker.
Quite the honker. That's right.
And if you go to that episode, the last record played was Aqualung by Jethro Tull.
Right.
And I did borrow it. And you'll be happy to know that I listened to it. I had my headphones on, poured me a glass of whiskey, and I thought, okay, here we go. And it's a fucking great record.
Oh, right? My God.
Well,
I don't know if you've been told. I think you've told me officially.
Yeah.
Because the Stephen Wilson remix of that, it was just gorgeous. It's gorgeous.
It with headphones. Is.
Pigs are flying outside.
I know. I may be a Tull fan. I'm not sure yet.
The hobos are getting jobs and the whores are giving up their evil ways.
Good Lord.
What does it mean if you're a Tull fan? Like, how do you know if you're a Tull fan? Like, if a guy touches your leg and your penis moves, does that mean you're a Tull fan?
Well, if you stand on one leg, you're totally in.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. What do you got? It's from 1971.
Now, let me tell you something before we go any further. Stephen Wilson has remixed, remastered this band's first two albums as well. And I am dying to hear it. No, this is the original.
Yeah. Is it Yes?
No.
Okay. Is it Yes? No.
No, that joke will never get old.
Yeah.
So I have with me tonight one of my favorite prog albums ever of all time, and most certainly my favorite by this band. This is the Start Here album by this band, no doubt about it. You probably go, when you mention certain bands' names, like you did with the John McLaughlin thing.
Mahavishnu.
Mahavishnu.
Same episode, yeah.
Right?
192.
And you say, oh, John McLaughlin, Mahavishnu, I just go, meh. And then you hear it.
It's called Mehavishnu.
Mehavishnu. And you go, okay, you listen to it new because you go in sort of with those old jaded ears. And even if you're, truth being, my ears never gave it a chance because it was what it was. And I'm like, not interested because of, there's no lyrics, it's an instrumental prog jazz album, blah, blah, blah. So this is one of those groups where people go, I don't subscribe to this. So I already poo-poo it, right? Well, this is a Start Here point, all right? In my box, this band's, it's their second album, also their second appearance on the show. And this album depicts one of the most colossal battles of all time recorded on music, and not Bytor and the Snow Dog.
I was just going to say,
not.
But we all know that Bytor and the Snow Dog is the most epic battle.
This out Bytors and Snow Dogs the fuck out of Rush.
Okay.
Okay. Right now we have.
I find that rather difficult to believe.
The genius of Keith Emerson, Greg Lake,
Lincoln Palmer,
and the unsettled, uncertainty, and ambiguously problematic Carl problem.
Carl problem.
I have brought it. Tarkus with me, Ryan.
Who plays guitar on that album? Nobody.
Greg Lake. Greg Lake plays the fuck out of a guitar.
There's plenty of fired Fleetwood Mac guitar players that could have put some great solos on that record to make it.
This is their second record.
There's
came out
to sleep with.
Yeah.
He would have banged Keith Emerson.
Yeah, I think Keith Emerson was banging Christine McVie at the time, who was banging their producer Greg Lake,
who was banging Martin Birch.
And yeah, you know, and Carl Problems would go, "Okay, problem with all this." This is Tarkus. It's I'm going to play the song Tarkus. It was released June 14th, 1971. Produced by Greg Lake, written by Emerson and Lake primarily. And it's interesting because this song is a series of movements. Wow, mm-hmm. I wish I had a series of movements,
oh boy.
If you know what I mean. So it's Keith Emerson writes the initial movement one. And then Emerson and Lake do number two, where whenever there's a vocal interlude, that's Emerson and Lake. And then there's the musical interludes. And that so each movement has like a musical, then musical with vocals, then musical with vocals. So it came in seven movements, okay? Obviously, this iconic, you've seen this iconic album cover a million times.
Sure, Tarkus is a...
So take a good look at this, though. Really take a good look at it. Open it up on the outside. Now, the artist, they are known for their great, great artwork. So...
It looks a little bit like my Mystery to Me cover, which also
it
has,
really does.
It's like the same artist.
Right, sure. It's by a guy named, what's his name? William Neal. And he designed that. It's an armadillo... / tank, army tank hybrid, all on a rainbow, like never sort of this endless rainbow battlefield, right? Mm-hmm. And if you notice the bones of its victims or its conquests in the background, right? And the word Tarkus is written in bones. So it started out as a doodle by the artist William Neal, who was actually working this up for the cover of an album by a band called Rare Bird out of London.
Also part of the Rare Bird is a great band out of that same area of Genesis and
right.
All those that group.
So another one of those. So it was their album that he as Time Flies By, I think was the album that he was
okay. Yeah,
right. Doing this
those guys are
doodle
cool.
for right.
Those guys
yeah,
are pretty cool.
So, but they rejected it. They were like, no, that's not kind of what we're doing. But Keith Emerson saw the idea when the artist submitted it after hearing that they were looking for something similar. So he goes, okay. And Emerson looked at it and went, oh, that's kind of cool. So he and Greg Lake and the artist sort of further developed the idea and the storyline, which went on to then include all the characters. Now, you got the gatefold open, right?
I do.
All the characters in the gatefold, which are hybrid animals, war machines.
Right.
So once the armadillo tank and his adversarial foes sort of started taking shape and the storyline took place, they said, okay, now we got something here. Now we got to give it a name. So Keith Emerson says, we've got to give it a name. It's something guttural. It's got to start with a T and end with a flourish. But this armadillo needed a science fiction kind of name that represented Charles Darwin's theory of evolution in reverse. Some mutilation of the species caused by radiation. How about we call it Tarkus? And the artist goes, well, it's pretty much this.
It was you're high.
Right.
So
but the artist claims it was a sort of a blend of the two words, carcass, obviously the, mm-hmm. Done dead animal.
And the T that he wanted.
Yeah. And Tartarus, which is in the biblical book of Peter, is a place of punishment. And and if you notice again, it's written in bones on the name Tarkus on the front cover. So now that the characters are in place, right, a concept is simple. It's the futility of war depicted using man-made mutated symbols of destruction. So the entire album with those seven movements, if you look from...
Oh, there's seven little
exactly,
vignettes
those, now
here,
those are
so
those depict each movement in the title track. So... It's going to start off. Now, I'll go through the movements real quick. Movement number one is called Eruption. And that if you look to
Eddie
the
Van
left.
Halen.
Yeah. And his giant skull brother.
We have a volcano.
Right. We have a volcano now. That is the birth of Tarkus, born in volcanic eruption centuries before known history, right? The main riff now, sort of Tarkus's theme song, is a really cool, awesome riff in 10-8. Which is cool. Now, drummers will generally tend to take a longer passage like that, the 10-8, and we'll divide it, subdivide it into 5-8 and 5-8. It's still, the eighth note is still the...
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Right. So you're going to do 5-8, right?
You're a guitar player. So.
Right. Yeah, well, much like a guitar player, Ryan, in a blues tune, you're going to feel it in 4-4 in triplets, or you're going to feel it in 12-8. If I went boom, 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 do, 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 that's one riff.
Yeah.
But drummers hear it as 2 6-8 riffs as opposed to 1 12-8 riff because we have the setup. It helps us to kind of sort of keep the space and the syncopation where it belongs.
Yeah, orient yourself.
As it needs to be throughout the riff, and it breathes with, you know, the upstrokes and downstrokes
rather than a 6-4.
Yeah, I feel it more as a 5-8, and initially it does present itself as a 5-8, but as the riff unfolds, it's definitely a 10-8. But again, I still feel it as 2 5-8s.
Also, Number of the Beast, Iron Maiden, 10-8.
Right, exactly. So you're gonna find that. So that's number one. That's movement number one. So this Tarkus riff is what sets it all off. That defines the Tarkus beast. It's the half armadillo, half army tank. Okay. Movements 2, 3, 4, and 5 now start describing the battles that Tarkus engages in. Movement number two, and the second movement is called Stones of Years, are a mutated stone version of a spider-like creature, much resembling sort of an oil refinery, if you will. It's got the spikes of a stegosaurus. It has 2 antennae, each with a set of its own eyes. That's the second one up there, Ryan.
Mm-hmm. I see it. I'm looking at it.
And a shield made of stone embedded in its side. Okay, so the Tarkus does battle with that, and it kills it. It crushes it. Moves on to Iconoclast. Now, the Iconoclast is the third figure you'll see. It's a mutated hybrid pterodactyl warplane.
I see that.
Which Tarkus destroys. Okay.
Harkening back to imagery of World War II, I presume.
Right, exactly. More of a, like, sort of a bomber fighter.
ME-262, perhaps.
Prince of Turbojets, I understand. cluster.
All right.
Burst of clustered R4M quartets in my snout. Watch those English planes go burn. Now, movement number four is called Mass. Now, that is filled with a lot of religious references, which during some of the live shows they actually left out. But the Mass, as the being, is a lizard grasshopper rocket launcher.
I see that.
Right?
Yes.
Okay.
Looks pretty impressive.
Absolutely it is. Now, number five, the movement number five, is the final battle.
It's a monkey man.
Well, no, it is
scorpion.
Not.
It's like a scorpion monkey man.
It is Manticore, Ryan.
Oh, Manticore.
Now, what is Manticore? Their record label.
Oh, Manticore is the record label.
2 years label. They started.
That's right.
Right. 2 years later, they started a label called Manticore. Now, a manticore is a legendary creature of Persian origin, which depicts a human head on the body of a lion. And it's a tail. Now, there are two versions of it. The tail is either covered in venomous spikes, sort of like a porcupine quills, which can be launched like arrows, like, you know, with a flick of the tail. Or in the version that they use, the tail is the scorpion, like a scorpion tail with a stinger that can also be launched like a spear. So, and the manticore eats its victims whole using 3 rows of teeth. So now you've got your battles, right? Now, movement number six, Battlefield, depicts the epic battle between Manticore and Tarkus. And it begins with sort of a battle march, like, you know, Manticore sort of going, okay. Like
he's taking on the biggest foe.
If somebody doesn't stop this Tarkus, the world is doomed. So
Tarkus is the
Tarkus
bad guy?
Tarkus is the bad guy. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, he's going around fucking with all these people.
Oh, okay. So, I had it backwards because, I mean, Monkey Man looks a little...
Well, you got to bring out your serious weapons, don't you? You know?
Yeah, okay.
So you hear the sort of the battle marches as Manticore and Tarkus are sort of coming onto the battlefield. And I love the metaphor, if you flip again, the rainbow, which is the battlefield, which, you know, depicts peace and you know, it's all happening on this rainbow, you know, where there should be peace. And I think there's a great dichotomy to that. So They do battle hardcore, and it's really the only movement written entirely by Greg Lake. It's got that heavy march, and it's got some cool guitar work in it. Movement number 7, the final movement. Okay, now, Manticore defeats Tarkus.
Yay.
Right? Now,
Liz is going, rolling her eyes.
Right? Movement number 7 is called Aqua Tarkus. Right?
Come on.
It is the final movement.
Is there flute in this one?
No, there's not. But it's sort of the, in literary terms, there's the, have you ever heard of the term denouement?
Uh-huh.
Right? So after the resolve, after all hell, Stephen King was great in it. The movie Carrie is a great example of that, where the movie, the climax of the movie's over and you go, where it brings resolve and it brings peace and everything starts to make sense.
Mm-hmm. And then?
And then.
And then. The last movement, Aqua Tarkus, as the battlefield, you finally hear Manticore, you know, victoriously with the same march that he came onto the field, marching off into the distance, and it fades. And then you hear the Tarkus theme again. Aqua Tarkus, sort of the old, it may be dead, but it's not buried.
Oh my God.
It's the Aqua version of Tarkus.
Tarkus, right? 13.
Right. So I guess all in all, what this does, it symbolizes man's cycle of war. Like as we celebrate the armistice and the ceasefires and all the peace treaties and, you know, yay, the war's over. But we know there's going to be another war. Sooner or later, we don't know when, we don't know why. It could be about blood, it could be about treasure, it could be about, well, you know, the Trojan Wars were about Helen of Troy. It was over a chick.
Trojan War is also one of your films.
Well, yeah, it's a bitch to get on. That was when they first made it mandatory. And I fought that in court, hence, yeah.
Trojan War. Court.
So anyway, it really...
The state of California versus 80s penis.
I was... They dismissed it for lack of evidence. So...
It wouldn't show up.
Thank you. Good night. Thanks for tuning in, you guys. Make sure you follow us on Facebook.
So that's essentially what this record is about. It's about man's inevitability to find himself in another goddamn scrape. So, without any further ado, we could go ahead and put it on. It's going to be side one, track one. Island Records in the UK, Cotillion Records in the US. Oh, a real quick side note. Talking about their Manticore label, Ryan.
Yes.
It was initially distributed. They formed the label in 73, and from 73 to 74. Five, I think it was. It was distributed by Atlantic Records, but oddly enough, in the remaining 2 years, 75 to 77, I think I may get those dates wrong. But guess who picked up their distribution after Atlantic decided not to carry Manticore's records?
Please say Casablanca.
I will tell you Motown, and you're going to go, what?
Motown?
Motown? What? Motown distributed.
Manticore's
catalog. How about that? Isn't that crazy?
Because they sold
when they were in California.
They sold records, yeah.
Yeah, they'd moved to California by then for sure. But yeah, how crazy is that, right? So anyway, we're going to listen to Tarkus, all 7 movements.
TARDIS.
Tarkus.
TARDIS. Doctor Who.
Tomorrow. Oh, is that a thing?
Uh-huh. The TARDIS and Doctor Who.
seen your eyes. Half the day has made you so unwise. Realize you are.
Said a prayer, save every single hair on his head. He's dead. a minister of hate. I just arrived too late to be spared. Who cared? The weaver and the rat that he made. The pilgrim wandered in, committing every sin that he could. So good. The coroner of grief was set in the belief he'd be saved from the grave. The weaver and the rat that he made.
Aquatarcus is on the loose. Ron, look out. It's right behind you. Woo! This was a dance party, right? Dance party.
I couldn't stop dancing to that music.
I know, man. So, come on, Yan.
No.
That's a start here record for these guys. What? No, come on. Yes, you are.
I said,
yes, you are.
That did not do at all what you said.
Well, sure it did.
No.
Like, okay, what part didn't you like? Remember at the end, right before the sort of the rebirth, the reintroduction, sort of Godzilla Jr. before Aquatarkus was born.
All right, stop.
First of all, let me
talk about how there's. It's just the three of them, and that's always been my problem with Emerson, Lake, and Palmer.
If there was four guys in the band, they couldn't call themselves Emerson, Lake, and Palmer. It would have to be Emerson, Lake, Palmer,
and somebody else.
Dude.
And Martin Barr
right.
would have been better. But all the parts, let's backtrack because we literally have the display of the gatefold and yes. you were pointing to parts and here's this. And here's this,
yeah.
and here's this. I don't think anyone listening caught that who's never heard this before.
Well, you have to understand music like I do.
That is an offensive statement to all of us.
Oh, no. No, what I'm saying is that these songs were specifically written and those...
No, they weren't.
No, they weren't.
I don't feel that at all.
Those paintings were made to fit that storyline. There is a storyline behind this. And if you don't go, sort of let yourself go.
Like a David Lynch film.
You have to let yourself go. All right.
All right. And you have to plug in all the holes.
You do.
Okay.
You do.
There's only a certain amount of people that get David Lynch.
Well, I know that. Listen, this came at a time.
I wouldn't even compare this to David Lynch.
This was 1971. I was barely, June, I just turned 12 years old. Mott Tietz's dad had totally got me into classical music. Synthesizers were present everywhere. Be in the place, in the time in 1971. Okay, 12 years old. Synthesizers were starting to happen. This was experimental. Bands were doing things they weren't doing before. This is a British prog band that took a chance and did this something so diverse and so different. And it was so specifically, the story was specifically written around this artwork and that these creatures that they invented. And so there is a story. There is a specific story. And if you don't let yourself follow that story and just take it as an album, you're going to come up with the conclusion you came up with. But
Don't pin me down like that.
I'm going to say, but at the end, remember, like right before, like as Manticore is walking off the battlefield victorious to that march, and you're going, it's not big enough. But the thing is, all that mechanical weird shit that you were kind of wincing a little bit and go, I don't know. Think about this. This is as this victory has been made and mankind is safe, that man versus machine, this musician versus synthesizer, as opposed to guitar, which everybody wanted back then. Hendrix was just, still partially warm at the time. Hendrix was barely, he had, one foot out of the grave, right? So what the metaphor, the music, there's so much metaphorical music going on in here. What that was is that was as the victory march and we're, hey, peace, war is over, yay, no more war. That was man toiling with his machines again. As we're marching off into victory and the war to end all wars.
Okay.
That was the metaphor. And if you don't lend yourself to that, you're going to go, just as a piece of, and I say, just as a piece of music.
Right.
You're not going to appreciate that as much.
Well, you're plugging in a lot of holes there.
One of my films.
How do these keep coming up?
I had a busy career.
I'm not going to discount what you're hearing in that. And Liz and I are both first-time listeners, and we're both going, I don't get all of this, and I like my prog.
I know. Oh no! I'm not saying.
I'm not saying that I can't like.
But that was a joke, by the way. Insult anybody.
I can't. Visualize what's happening. I feel like it's really understated, and I don't think the grandeur is there.
There's and, not and supposed the, to be grandeur.
And the desperation is there. I don't think anything is there. I think it's just them plunking around for 18 minutes
isn't
of nothing.
Plunking around. Isn't that what mankind was doing with his war machines and his hybrids and crossbreeding this and crossbreeding that? The word synthesizer. Even at the time.
Isn't
what
that,
that
what
mean?
Lou Reed was doing on Metal Machine Music? Bam, I win.
Lou Reed didn't have a drum on that record. Stop.
It's the same thing.
Not even close.
I win.
No.
Not even close. God damn it. Not even, come on. How can you even?
It was easy. It was an easy win.
What a win. That was so stupid.
There was a lot of good takeaways from that, but there were far too many like, oh, you guys.
Yeah, I know. And listen.
It was so self-indulgent.
Nobody likes a big guitar like me. Emerson, Lake & Palmer was Keith Emerson's baby. There's no doubt about it.
I told you while we were listening to it that I don't, like, it's not about the guitar.
All right, listen. If it makes you feel better, he shot himself in the head in 2016. He's dead now. He's not going to do it again.
Why would you think that would make me feel better?
I don't know. I just thought it might.
I told you that he's plunking around on an organ. That's it. Also one of your feet. But that's it. That's the only texture we get on this record. We don't have anything else.
Right.
We don't
right.
have the grandeur that the story
I would love to heard a bigger guitar on that. I'd like to hear.
It doesn't matter. I don't want it to be a guitar. It could be anything
else.
No,
I'd like, honestly.
It could be anything. It could be another patch on your goddamn keyboard. It could be anything.
I love this. I fucking love this record.
You can love this record, and you're not wrong.
But
I'm saying it's not doing anything.
But I would still, if they put more guitars in it, I think it would be a better band. I've always thought that. But I love what
they
did.
I'd say better keyboards, a Mellotron. Something.
Yeah,
anything.
But that wasn't...
Like, other textures. He never stops being like... Bing, 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 with no groove or no nothing. Fuck Keith. Fuck.
It's all from his classical. It's really based on classical music. Mussorgsky was one of his big influences. The classical guy.
Yeah.
You know, and that was... So he played in that stuff. Like, much like if you were a Hendrix fan, who would you tend to play like? If you were a blues fan, the Stevie Ray Vaughan, who does he play like? He doesn't play like, you know, Eddie Van Halen. He plays like his heroes.
I just think
so that's what he's gathered. And now he's got the electronic tools. Again, ironically enough, the new synthesizers and these new machines to play the old music with. Mm-hmm. In a way, it's a metaphor of the metaphor of the metaphor that's on this record.
It's a... Okay.
Right?
I'll be curious what everybody says.
Me too.
I'll put it out to the listeners. I mean, we're gonna agree to disagree here.
Yeah.
But...
By the way, Ryan.
Yes?
This went to number 9 on the U.S. album
what
charts.
What the fuck? Yeah. Are you serious?
So, that's all I got to say.
What the?
Yeah.
Number 9.
Number 9.
1971.
And guess what? The British album charts, what number did it go to, Ryan?
What?
Say number 1 for me.
Number 1?
Yes, thanks. So.
Okay. Again, I will say, Shabby Academy, please chime in.
Let
with
us
this.
Know.
This
is
fucking
this is a big one.
This
is a big one.
This thing is a big nothing burger.
We don't go head to head that often on here, but
no.
This is one of them. And on the same day, you admitted being told.
Exactly. On the same episode. Maybe my heart can be changed.
I
that last bit, okay. when it should have been triumphant, it was such a stupid motif.
Here's what we're going to do.
It was stupid.
Here's what we're going to do. I've got a great idea. I got a great Liz. Okay, everybody. Stephen Wilson, like I said before, redid this record. Maybe there are some guitar tracks that aren't on this record.
Hopefully Stephen Wilson put some guitar tracks.
So maybe... I'll go find the Stephen Wilson version of this. Uh-huh. Okay,
we'll revisit.
And I'll listen to it again.
Okay.
And if I think it's like, okay, and I won't give it to you if it's not a big difference. But if I'm hearing some guitars in it, I'm going to go, hey, Rye, dude, check this out, man. I swear to God.
It's a good record for guitar players to practice to. This is what I would do.
So here's if what... you find that Buckingham Nicks album anywhere, just pick it up because it's really good.
Thank you, Liz.
No,
I'm taking us out of the argument of ELP.
The Great Diffuser.
Yes, they call her the Great Diffuser. All right, well, we better get on down the road here. We thank you guys very much for hanging out. This is episode 174. Make sure you find us on the old social media stuff, you know, Twitters, Instagram, all that stuff, and Facebook, at Chevy Podcast. And, oh, my gosh, Liz, Amazon. We got an Amazon banner on our website. How close are we to Christmas at this point? We're like a month away?
1 month away, people.
This is the time you are
shopping at Amazon.
Doing your shopping.
Prime 1-2 day delivery.
Amazon.com. You know, go there. But first, go to our website, ChevyRoadRecordShow.com, and you'll find an Amazon banner. And click on that first, and we get a little kickback. Doesn't cost you a penny. Go over there and do all your Christmas shopping at Amazon through our website, ChevyRoadRecordShow.com. All right. Well,
yeah, find that Buckingham Nicks album and send it to me.
Yes, me too. AD claims that he sees it everywhere, but you never see it.
It's a black and white album cover. It's black and white.
Yeah, it's black and white.
Yeah.
I know that.
It's Stevie Nicks in close
Phoenix up. Because Stevie Nicks is a hometown girl here. That record is $80.
No.
Yes, it is.
Better not be. Well, I'm not going to buy it anyway.
Well, thanks, Liz Damian Brooks, for running the controls, as
thank
per
you.
Usual.
I'd like to thank a couple of people.
Okay.
I'd like to thank Dave Grouse.
Dave Krause. Yeah, dude. He sent some awesome records here.
Yes,
he sent. It will be in a mystery box soon.
Yeah, and he sent me several.
Yes, records. There's a bunch of records in there.
And I'm happy with them. They're all cool. And then I'd like to thank Brad Schick for sending me.
What did he send you?
Stone to Crow.
Oh, you lit up like speaking of Christmas.
I did. When I opened it up, I was standing next to Ryan. I was like, my whole body got goosebumps.
Oh, wow.
I love Stone to Crow.
Well, bring in John McVie and take care of that.
But thank you so much, both of you. Thank you so much for all of these records. And awesome.
Hell yeah. Yeah,
world's
it.
Biggest Maggie Bell fan.
Yes.
We're both looking at right now, aren't we?
Yes.
Yeah.
Love Maggie Bell. Love her.
And, well, AD, before I say what I'm about to say.
Beep, 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 doop, beep, 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 boop. Sorry.
Cell 5000 has been very quiet tonight, but let's say hi to her one last time. Otherwise, she gets pissed. Hey, Cell 5000, what the fuck?
best intro ever.
Well, the mystery boxes. Well, the mystery boxes have been siphoned empty by the Morgan Fisher turntable. So now it's time for me to head to the Circle K and buy some Swedish fish for the drive away from this hellscape known as Shabby Road. But before I go, I'll say I'm going to heave a derche to Andy Adams. I wrote that one on the plane.
Yeah,
that's
pretty
damn
good. You're very proud of yourself. That's a good one. That's good, though.
Even dare to.
And just like that, it's over. No kiss, no lingering embrace, not even a friendly and slightly awkward pat on the ass. Just done. But fret not, dear friends and loyal listeners. We'll be back next week for some good old-fashioned makeup humping and some more vinyl shenanigans. As always, we thank you so much for being out there with your ears on. We really, truly appreciate your support and your priceless correspondence. Keep those texts, those messages, and that correspondence coming. We freaking love it. Serious biz. Mm-hmm. You guys are insane. Yes. Every fucking one of you out there in the Shabby Academy is out of your freaking minds, and we love your letters, man. It's so great. We're codependent as fuck and couldn't possibly do this without you. And we're not above stalking you fuckers. So... And to my pal and co-host, Ryan McKay, I wish you a great evening. And to you, and to whoever you choose to share it with, I wish you a bail bond for two.
Come on. Come on. That's no Eva Derte.
A portion of the Shabby Road Record Show is fearlessly brought to you by those crazy bastards at nameonanything.com. Use the promo code SHABBY at checkout and save 10% on your order. nameonanything.com.